Welcome to all of our listeners.
I am Julia Resnick with the Association for Community Health Improvement and the Health Research and Educational Trust, both of which are affiliates of the American Hospital Association. I'm pleased to be here today with one of our member hospitals to continue our conversation about how hospitals can prevent violence in their communities. This is part of an AHA-wide initiative called Hospitals Against Violence. You can learn more about the work we've done over the past year and our upcoming Hospitals Against Violence Day on June 9th at aha.org. Today we'll be hearing from Sinai Hospital, part of LifeBridge Health in Baltimore, Maryland. We have a really fantastic team who's joining us, and I'd like them to introduce themselves so that we can start recognizing their voices.
Hi, I'm Ademola Ekolona, Program Director of Kuji Chagulia Center.
Hi, I'm Beth Huber, Manager of the Community Initiative Department at Sinai Hospital.
Hi, I'm Lane Levine, Project Manager in the Department of Population Health for LifeBridge Health.
And I'm Darlene Wan, Assistant Vice President of Population Health at LifeBridge Health.
I'm so happy to have this fantastic team with us today to learn more about what you're working on in your community. And I think to set a baseline, it would help our listeners to have an understanding of the community that you serve. Can you talk a little bit about that?
We are in northwest Baltimore City in a community called Park Heights, which is right off of a major park in the city, and it's also a redevelopment area. It is a low-income community, probably has some very frightening statistics in comparison to most other neighborhoods in the city. But we've been working here. Sinai Hospital has been very, very important in Park Heights and is part of just about every developmental activity going on here. It's a predominantly African-American community, very low income in most areas, but the community is trying to develop, trying to redevelop, and I think violence is one of the things that has proven to be a problem in the renaissance of Park Heights.
So can you tell me a little bit more about that and how violence emerged as a health issue for your hospital?
I can give an example of one of our most significant cases. We have the Street Violence Intervention Program, which is an effort by the hospital to intervene in the cycle of violence. A young man, 20 years old at the time, was returning from work one day. It was about 12:30 at night. He stops at a 7-Eleven near a corner in the Hilltop neighborhood. And as he's coming out, he's confronted by five youth teenagers, and they were saying, "You're not from around here," which is an introduction to, "We're going to beat you up." So he said, "Yes, I'm from up the street," but they didn't want to hear it. They attacked him. One of the guys had a knife. When he started cutting, some of the other youth ran. Well, Donnell ended up getting head wounds, back wounds, wounds on his hands and arms, and he was in the hospital. He had to be hospitalized, but was really significant how desperate he was. He went back to the 7-Eleven bleeding, and they told him he has to get out. They did not call 911. Across the street is a fire station, the city fire department. He goes over there and bangs on the door asking for help. They would not answer the door. They said that they could not when it was confronted later. Well, he gets into the hospital. He's here for 6 days. During that time, he found out that his ex-girlfriend had given birth to his son, his baby son. And our hospital responder, a member of our staff, went up to greet Donnell and to invite him to get out of the cycle of violence, to find out how we could help him so that he would not be re-injured and that there would not be retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
Donnell, at first, was reluctant to get involved, but after he found out that we could help him possibly get custody of his son, he became an enthusiastic supporter. And the day after he was released from the hospital, we accompanied him to Baltimore County Court and addressed the court, advising them of the supports that we would give to Donnell. And he would be also invited into the home visitor program that would help him properly attend to his infant child. Donnell was awarded custody on a contingent basis for 30 days, And during that time, we helped him get himself established. He has the baby. The baby's mother was going through a lot of trouble, and they had to take the baby from her rather early in the baby's life. But Donnell still has custody of the child. The child is now 2 years old, and we are still helping Donnell. He is on social services. He would actually like to go to college, but right now he has to get himself a little bit more stabilized. But his story is one of the most significant because he had definitely planned on revenge. And our offering of support services not only helped him get custody of his child, but took him out of the cycle of violence.
That is a really powerful story. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think it really beautifully illustrates how violence is both a social issue and a health issue. And a lot of hospitals aren't so deeply ingrained in this work. Can any of you talk about what drove your hospital to get involved in violence prevention?
We, like all hospitals, do a community health needs assessment. And when we did it in 2012, street violence was the number one concern of our immediate community around Sinai Hospital. And as a result of that, we needed to develop a response to it. So that was pretty much the kickoff of the development of our Kuji Jakalia Center, which the focus is providing young men who live in our community who come to the hospital for care some alternatives to going back on the street and either joining gang activity or drug activity. We're providing them with workforce readiness and mentoring services as another opportunity to help break into the cycle of violence. So that was one of our first decisions to because of the community health needs assessment.
Can you walk me through a little bit more about what your violence prevention work looks like and how you're engaging your community and other stakeholders in that process?
Okay, we've decided after the 2012 community health needs assessment, one of the phrases that came up that really prompted us to do something more concrete was the people were saying, we want these young men off the streets. And, well, what do you mean off the streets? We could lock them up. But that wasn't the solution. So we looked at, well, what can we do? We held a series of focus groups and did some surveys and interviews around the area, and surveys with young men and with teenagers, male teenagers, to determine what are the services that you need that could really help you stabilize and get out of the violence that's going on in the community. And they said, the older ones said, jobs. We want access to jobs. The younger ones said they wanted to be safe. Well, they were quite different. So what we did is we had a middle school mentoring program going on, and that we elaborated upon it so that the young people in the middle schools, two middle schools that we work in, would know that there are adults, that mentoring is very important, and it turns out that the person who's doing that, Garrett Williams, is really more powerful than the principal in one of the schools. He can get the young people to cooperate, and he helps the staff tremendously beyond just simple mentoring. But that's a very important factor in violence prevention. We hold a celebration of Youth Violence Prevention Week at that school, and it's always an opportunity for us to really get into talking against bullying. Now, we developed the Kuji Chagulia Center, and Kuji Chagulia is a Swahili word that is celebrated in the African-American holiday of Kwanzaa. That word Kuji Chagulia is interpreted as self-determination. That is to give you the power to define yourself, speak for yourself, and name yourself so that you can have control over your life. Well, with that as the founding principle, we created a workforce readiness program that leads to internships here in the hospital. And it's been very successful. We've had about 70 young men come into the program and develop job readiness skills, which surprisingly a lot of them had none. And we've had one guy who grew up in a household, he never saw anybody getting up and going to work in the morning. disabled mother and a drug-addicted father just wasn't something that was going to happen. This is part of the clientele. That's what we have to deal with. We can't make stereotypical presumptions, but when you're dealing with low-income, inner-city population, there's a lot of opportunity to expose them to what we call America, because they know the hood, but they don't know America. And the Workforce Readiness Program allows them to really participate in developing the kind of life skills that would make employment possible. Well, we have a 5-week Workforce Readiness Program. It's actually life skills getting it all together. And then they have an opportunity to do a 10-week internship, half-day, part-time, 5 days a week, here in the hospital, working in environmental services or housekeeping, perhaps patient transportation, distribution, or even in dietary. Mm-hmm. These entry-level jobs have turned into a real source of popularity for the program, because a lot of the young men in the community would like to get jobs at Sinai Hospital. And we use that to solidify a connection with the young men. There had been some reluctance at first to cite our program in the hospital because, well, will the guys want to come? But actually, we found it to be advantageous because they take the hospital environment seriously, and they know now why they should dress professionally and act professionally by being in the hospital here. For a lot of these young men, this is a real eye-opener to how they can get credible work in our community. Now, we also work very closely with community organizations. There's Safe Streets, Park Heights, which is an organization that's using the Cure Violence model out of mm-hmm. Chicago to reduce street violence. They actually go out and detect when violent incidents might be happening, a fight or something. They interrupt it. They try to negotiate to get the two parties to stop the violence and not get arrested. They identify the threat and the people at most risk of the violence, and they intervene. Where we come in our work with them, is when a patient is admitted to the trauma unit or is treated and released at the emergency department, we want to find out as much as we can about what was the incident about, why was violence the only alternative, and what can be done to prevent retaliation or re-injury to the patient. Mm-hmm. And Safe Streets helps us to do the types of investigation that we need, and we also help them by getting the information from the patients and sharing it with Safe Streets, not so that it compromises HIPAA, but so we get a better idea of what is going on in the neighborhood. We also work with local community organizations. There's an organization here in Baltimore called Mothers of Murdered Sons and Daughters, which is the acronym is MOMS, but it's just an indicator of the seriousness of the situation when you have an organization, Mothers of Murdered Sons and Daughters, and they do activities in the community and are pressuring to get guns off the street and to get the police and to do more. But we look at this violence as a public health issue rather than a crime issue. And mm-hmm. as a result, we are getting good cooperation from other organizations.
It's exciting that you're trying to address violence from multiple perspectives. And I think a lot of our listeners will be able to be inspired by that approach. I'm also curious about how your work has changed or evolved over time. I'm sure you've learned things that have altered how you've been addressing violence in your community. Can any of you speak to that?
I think the biggest change from when we really started was we thought that we could do basically a 16-week program and things would be fine. The guys would get, they'd have a little stipend. Oh, they do get a stipend, $150 a week in workforce readiness and $175 when they're in the internship. But it turns out that we have to continue services beyond that 16 weeks. The alumni services, when you have convinced a guy that he should not carry a gun, that he should stop smoking marijuana, that he should stop engaging in risky behavior, what is the alternative that you've given him? Frankly, what we are proud of is the way that these young men will respond when we are introducing them to new things. We have an aspect of our program that allows a young man to get two outfits that are ready, appropriate for interview and appropriate to wear in the workplace. Well, this is very important because these guys don't have that type of attire, and they would not buy it. But by taking them shopping, going to the rather low-cost department store, it turns out to be an exciting experience for them, and they begin to talk about, well, you know, I haven't worn a tie since I was in church 10 years ago, and, hey, I like this. And they like to get dressed up. And what we saw and we are still seeing is that we should really have these direct services available to these young men for a year because then they have a chance to get stabilized. You can get a job, perhaps, but can you keep the job? And if you can't keep the job, what happens? Can you get some support to understand why? We provide bus transportation for them and assist them in court issues. They've come to us, even when they're sick, and ask us what to do first. Because for many of these young men, unfortunately, they don't have family members who are going to take that type of interest in them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that's where I see the growth in this program, because we actually provide services. Many hospital violence intervention programs are basically referring people to other agencies, which is fine, and we refer them when we can't do things ourselves. But decision to have this program actually operated by the hospital is probably the most significant thing in our success.
And I think I can add to that. One of the things that is particularly exciting to us is that while we had had sort of a loose partnership with Safe Streets and other organizations as we've built our Kuji Chagaliya Center program and the violence interruption portion in concert with the jobs training provisions that we have for young men, we have been able to convince the HSCRC, which is in Maryland, the Health Services Cost Review Commission. They are the hospital rate-setting agency in our state, and they have seen, of course, we've had a lot of issues with violence, and it's a major health concern, and they have felt that it was such an important issue and that our Safe Streets programs operating throughout the city and our existing Kuji Chagaliya Center have been so effective working in a very, in a more of a loose affiliation way, that to bring it together and create a stronger collaboration with funded provisions so that we have been able to now, with the 50% match by the hospital, $200,000 from the HSCRC and $100,000 from Sinai Hospital per year, been able to bring on an expansion program that will allow us to reach more individuals and more areas of violence in our neighborhood. And we've added on 3 violence interrupters for the Safe Streets program, 2 hospital responders, and a part-time social worker in the hospital setting. And we are doing joint hiring, joint meeting, and expanded referral processes in order to really address the needs of our community.
Darlene, you mentioned the effectiveness of your program. I wonder if any of you could speak at all to what results or improvements you're seeing as a result of these programs.
There are 2 programs that we see results from. One is Safe Streets, and one is our own Kuji Chagaliya Center. The Safe Streets program, they over the years, they've done 276 conflict mediations in the areas where where they have their sites located. They've seen killings go down by 56% and shootings go down by 44%. In terms of the Kuji Chagaliya Center, since the program has started, we've worked with about 70 clients. Last year alone, 24 clients enrolled in the program, 71% of whom completed workforce training. 22 clients were actively engaged in mentoring service throughout the year, and 11 clients received assistance with job placement. And with the middle school mentoring program, we've been working with at least two elementary schools, sometimes more, over the past 10 years. Actually, that's middle schools, elementary and middle schools.
And now onto what is probably my favorite question. You guys have been at this a while, and you probably have some words of wisdom that you can share with other hospitals who might be thinking about getting involved in violence and prevention. But violence prevention, what would you like to share with them?
One thing we would like to share is, over the time, Adamola has determined the need for social work support. As he described, these young men are here for a while, and we need to continue working with them after they get through those weeks of workforce readiness or in conjunction with those weeks. They bring a lot of life experiences to us, a lot of trauma that they have grown up with, and up until hiring, we're actually hiring as we speak, the job has just been posted, we have not been able to give a lot of attention to that component of their lives, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we see symptoms, post-traumatic stress disorder, such as people describe having nightmares and flashbacks, and some of the young men are sort of hyper-vigilant. They're like sort of looking over their shoulder. And that interferes with the ultimate goal of helping them to find successful employment. We don't want those things to interfere, and we also believe in holistically taking care of, all aspects of someone's life. So with this new addition of a social worker, we are hoping that we will start to, handle some of those deep-seated traumas that people bring to us, and we will refer out for ongoing mental health treatment, but that is a huge issue in our city. I'm not sure if it's a huge issue everywhere, but we do anticipate the social worker on staff to help start, providing the proper attention to those issues.
Also, we address violence on a system-wide basis at LifeBridge Health. We hold a system-wide regular convening among the other programs within the hospital system that address violence, whether it's preventing childhood abuse and neglect, elder abuse and neglect, providing crisis response and counseling for victims of intimate partner violence, or providing vocational services and workforce development for community members to redirect them from cycles of violence. We all come together to share resources and develop new ideas based on the trends we see.
I think over the years that we've been researching and actually now operating this program, it's very important, I think, for the medical staff to realize how that young patient, that young victim, sees the nurse and the doctor. The nurse and the doctor have a lot of authority. With the right attitude, that a nurse can basically open the road for our bedside conversation. That nurse who can treat a teenage boy as if he's her own son, and come with that type of mommy authority that, oh, no, you've got to pull it together. No, do this here. This one, I brought this person to talk to you. But the doctor and the nurse, if they are aware that this young person has suffered an injury due to street violence, their sympathy, their advice is taken seriously. I don't think that should be underestimated. Also, I think that in our decision to do Kuchi Chagulia Center and in the expansion of Safe Streets now, we have to bring the right kind of people to do this work. They have to be people who know the street, who know the street life. And these people may not be the kind of professionals that the hospital would usually retain, but they can be brought up to speed, so to speak. We mm-hmm. have people working in our organization who have criminal records and have taken the time to really add to their skills and turn their life around. And doing this work in the hospital has proven to be very popular. There are some old heads, these guys in their early 40s, who have retired from the street and they want to do something reasonable. And the jobs at Safe Streets and Hospital Responder are very popular. I think we also have the advantage, as I mentioned before, that this hospital has committed to this program. There are all kinds of supports available to our clients. We know that when you are inviting a young person to take advantage of the opportunity to get into the program, if the mother or the sister or the daughter, the brother of that patient is there, they would also encourage him to take advantage of the services, and we provide access to our services. Community Initiatives, the department in which we, QG Child Relief Center is based, offers at least 15 different kinds of social support, health support programs that our clients can take advantage of. And so when a guy comes in and he needs employment, yes, but his girlfriend, she may be having a baby and she's going to have the baby soon, so we can enroll her in home visiting program. It's the type of thing that the hospital's level of commitment here is unusual, and I think it's just wonderful. But I think in many hospitals, just to have the idea that somebody's going to visit the patient at the bedside and invite them to look for services, to get kinds of support so that he's not going to be released into a more dangerous situation at home, mm-hmm. or in the home neighborhood.
That is wonderful. I agree with you. So I want to thank all of you for taking the time to talk with me today. I so appreciate your insights and your dedication to serving your community. So thank you so much for being here, and I've really appreciated this conversation.
It was our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.